This is Rural Health Leadership Radio.
Episode 54, a conversation with Tim Size, Executive Director of the Rural Wisconsin Health Cooperative.
Work to find common ground with those around you, whether you agree or disagree.
Welcome to the Rural Health Leadership Radio with your host, Dr. Bill Oxier. Each week, Dr. Oxier has a conversation with a different rural health leader to discuss what's working and what's not working in rural health, along with other topics of interest to rural health leaders. Rural Health Leadership Radio's goal is to improve health in rural America by providing a simple, no-cost means to share information and connect rural health leaders from around the country. And now, here's Dr. Oxier with today's guest.
Hi, everybody. I am your host, Dr. Bill Oxier, and welcome to Rural Health Leadership Radio. While one behavior, if you improved on, would make a huge difference for you and your organization, while you're probably already a great communicator, if you improved your communication skills, what would that do for you? If you improved at delegating, what would that do for you and your organization? What about if you improved at conflict management? What would that do for you and your employees? Whatever that behavior might be, the most effective leaders identify areas of improvement for constant improvement. What about you? Improving on a behavior is something that an executive coach, like me, can assist you with. For the next few weeks, Rural Health Leadership Radio is accepting applications from rural health leaders to work with me either in a group coaching program or one-on-one coaching. We're going to accept six in the rural health leaders into the group coaching program and six rural health leaders for one-on-one coaching, all at an incredible value with a guaranteed return on investment. For those of you who've already emailed me to start the application process, thank you. We're going through those now and scheduling phone calls as part of that process. For those of you who have yet to email me, do so today before it's too late and these programs fill up. All you need to do to apply is send an email to me at bill@billoxier.com. That's bill@billoxier.com. And let me know if you're interested in group coaching or one-on-one coaching. Now, on 100% of the proceeds for the group coaching will go to Rural Health Leadership Radio, and a portion of the proceeds for the one-on-one coaching will go to Rural Health Leadership Radio. So by participating in these opportunities, not only will you become a more effective leader, you're also going to be supporting Rural Health Leadership Radio. Now, let's turn our attention to today's guest, Tim Size. Tim is the Executive Director of the Rural Wisconsin Health Cooperative. Tim, welcome to Rural Health Leadership Radio.
Bill, it's my pleasure to be with you.
Well, I appreciate this. I was fortunate to get to see you at the Wisconsin Rural Health meeting recently in the Wisconsin Dells. I'd never been there before. A beautiful part of the country to get to Wisconsin. You know, I could go on and on about you as an individual, but our listening audience likes to hear it straight from the guest's mouth. Can you tell us about Tim Size? Who is Tim Size?
That's probably still a very open question, but let me start. Some listeners may know I just turned 70 this year. Very proud of that. But most importantly, I have no plans for retiring. I basically just don't understand the concept. So I hope to be here for a good while longer. I just find rural health so fascinating and so energizing that no plans to leave. In terms of how I got my start, I have an undergraduate degree in engineering. Then I got my master's in one of the country's first programs in health administration, hospital administration at University of Chicago. Then I found myself in La Paz, Bolivia, running a Methodist hospital. Basically just seemed interesting, so I decided to do it. I came to the Wisconsin, which was at the time, after getting back from Bolivia, I was newly married, living in my parents' basement, my in-laws' basement bedroom, not a great place for newlyweds. And so was fortunate to get a job offer at University of Wisconsin Hospital, you know, about 40 years ago. Then in that role was doing outreach. I started off doing traditional hospital administration stuff. Then I asked to begin to try to build better relationships with rural hospitals, started to do that. In that capacity, we started, a bunch of us started the Rural Wisconsin Health Cooperative. At that time, it was the Rural Wisconsin Hospital Cooperative. I had the opportunity to work over the years with some really great people, which some of your listeners may know, Bill Beach, and then actually three of five NRHA presidents from Wisconsin. I worked very closely with Harold Brown, Bill Sexton, and Fred Moskow. And I think it basically originally we were created to do shared services at the co-op, but then immediately we saw the opportunities to be advocates for rural health. My career is goals were really to try to do something useful and not be bored. And I think anyone who works in rural health will understand that that's why we like it.
Absolutely. Well, you're definitely an authority. I enjoy you. Quite often you speak at meetings on a national level as well as a state level. And I always enjoy the wisdom that you share with the listeners, which is why I wanted you to be a guest here on Rural Health Leadership Radio. And of course, you know, the name of this program is Rural Health Leadership Radio. So let me ask you, what is your definition of leadership?
I actually define it almost exactly the way I define advocacy. And that is leadership, advocacy are maybe two halves of the same coin, but it's about working with other people to make something that's in your head and their head, a vision that you share, helping it become a reality. Also believe leadership can be at all levels in the organization. It's just not the C-suite. Also believe that leaders are not so much born as made. So I've long been a big fan and supporter of leadership development. In fact, I'm a co-chair of the National Rural Health Association's foundation. And the reason I'm doing that is because the main purpose of that foundation is to help grow the next generation of rural leaders, both in advocacy and in provision of healthcare.
Excellent. And your work is very much appreciated. So why did you choose healthcare as an occupation to begin with?
Well, as I said earlier, I actually started on a career to become an engineer, in fact, become a biomedical engineer. And that's because, you know, typical reasons of, you know, I enjoyed math, I enjoyed science, but also I am virtually tone deaf and don't have a good rote memory. So I really struggled with foreign language in high school. So I was really looking for a way of getting a college degree that didn't require me to struggle, you know, yet again, trying to pass a course in foreign language. And so, yeah, you know, it's the way you make these really important decisions for kind of strange reasons. Then when I was in college in the summer before my senior year, I was working at a laboratory, and I realized that while I liked math and science, I really didn't want to spend my life working in a laboratory. I also had kind of a philosophical belief that there's an awful lot of stuff that we'd already invented that we weren't doing a very good job distributing around the country. You know, I struggled what to do. And eventually someone suggested, well, why don't you go into hospital administration? And quite frankly, I couldn't think of a reason not to. And I had already thought of reasons why not to do a million other things. Like, right. I never had any interest in being a physician because basically I'm not really good with blood. But this was the 60s, and they were very interesting, challenging times in our country. So I'm not sure many of us at that age thought any of this through very deeply. Right. So got to school, got my master's in hospital administration, and have continued to stay in this field.
Excellent. So that explains why you chose healthcare as an occupation. Why the focus on rural health, Tim?
That's probably even less thoughtful.
Are there any foreign language avoidance or blood issue avoidance in that?
Not this time. Okay. I had been, as mentioned, at the University of Wisconsin in the hospital there. And after 5 years, I basically had run its course. I mean, it was a really great experience, but a little bit more regimented of a career than I wanted. And also at that time, they very tightly controlled by state government, which made it kind of bureaucratic. I was fortunate that I decided to leave to get two job offers, both in Wisconsin, where we really, even then, had developed some pretty deep roots. And the first one was, and the offer that I chose was to become the first employee, the director at the co-op. It really wasn't, to be truthful, so much about going into rural health, but I was attracted to the idea, which was still pretty new then, of a bunch of rural hospitals where they were independent, which most were at that time, or part of systems that there's opportunities for them to work together. As you know, Upper Midwest, Wisconsin, Minnesota, this is co-op country, strong tradition in rural communities of people working together for agricultural purposes, et cetera. And so the model of co-op fit really well. I also like the idea of being able to be a little entrepreneurial. Having said all of that, it's really the dedication, passion of some of the people I've worked with in rural health that have kept me here. And basically, I guess rural health has just become part of my DNA over the years. Also, I know it's in my it's already in my DNA that I just have a little bit of a bias for the underdog, and I think rural health has a pretty good claim for that role.
Absolutely, no question about that. So, what is the state of affairs for rural health in the state of Wisconsin, Tim?
Our states are, it varies a lot as we move around the country, but in many ways, rural Wisconsin is kind of a typical average rural place. We're not a frontier area, but our cities and our rural areas have a lot of adjacency. So we're kind of typical. So I think our issues are probably pretty similar, notwithstanding some regional variation. Obviously, the big one for all of us is Medicare, Medicaid. Medicaid, particularly now with what's going on in Washington with the cuts that we're facing. But my whole career at the co-op and our advocacy agenda almost from day one has been fighting for a more equitable Medicare reimbursement. I was here on the ground floor when the prospective payment system was started, and which was a disaster for rural from the get-go. That then led over many years to the development of Critical Access Hospital and other programs to help rural. Another big issue, and this may be a little bigger for us in Wisconsin, is issues around health plan network adequacy. We have a history in Wisconsin of multi-specialty clinic-owned health plans, so the idea of closed or narrow networks is something we have more experience with here. So we may be a little bit ahead of the curve. And a little later for that time, I'll do a deeper dive in that because I think it's probably the biggest threat or challenge, not only in Wisconsin, I would say across the country in terms of rural health. We, like everyone else, is trying to sort ourselves out around this volume to value incentives. We have the challenge of low volume providers not enjoying the same economy of scale of larger urban facilities. On the other hand, that doesn't make us exempt from the need to work harder, smarter, better. I think some of us, not all of us, we have issues around avoiding kind of collateral damage when some of the giants do battle. So it's maybe the unintended consequences. It's not like, usually, people try to work well with rural communities, but sometimes their eyes are so focused on another major competitor that we can get caught up in some negative ways. Workforce is huge. While I have no intention to retire, I know a lot of colleagues, increasingly younger than I am, baby boomers are retiring, and they're retiring out of being doctors, nurses, administrators into being, unfortunately, too often patients. Right. I think we are inadequately prepared in our state and across the country to deal with that reality. And that's on top of the maldistribution of providers that rural health has been challenged by my whole career. I think physician staff engagement, part of the workforce issue is to keep people at their highest productive possibilities. And that means their engagement with us as employers, their satisfaction. There's ways we can be a lot better at that. And all the data I've seen has those numbers going the wrong way. More disenchanted physicians, more disenchanted other advanced practitioners. Mm-hmm. Along that line, effective use of all caregivers, I deeply believe that we just don't have the luxury of doing anything other than making sure all advanced practitioners can work at the highest level of their education. I think that's on its way to being accepted, but that's not a done deal yet. And then I think the last issue that I've long been I'm almost in a pioneering sort of way, an advocate for is rural economic and community development. I really believe that rural health is as important to the economy and the development of local communities any other major economic sectors like agriculture, manufacturing, mining, whatever. So that's most of what we do from an advocacy point of view fits into one of those categories.
Very interesting. Good work as well. You know, when I was at that meeting in Wisconsin, you gave an address and you talked about today's rural context. Can you talk about that? What is today's rural context?
Yeah, I think the best summary I've seen recently actually came out of the CDC, which has started to pay attention to rural post-election. And I'm very grateful for that because they have a lot of resources. And let me just quote two things that they've said. Americans living in rural communities are more likely to die prematurely from the top five causes of death, and that's heart disease, accidents, stroke, cancer, respiratory disease, than are their urban counterparts. Making the situation worse, or maybe partially explaining it, is their healthy people, 2025 self-reported health-related behaviors are lower in rural counties. So we don't sleep as much, we smoke too much, we drink too much, we don't maintain normal body weight, and we don't exercise enough. So all those things probably lead pretty much to the five causes of death being more prevalent in rural. That's a major challenge. It's a major challenge for healthcare. It's also a major challenge for making our communities healthier.
You know, you alluded to this earlier in some of your comments, you know, about the political things happening right now. There's a lot of chaos. There's a lot of change, constant change in healthcare. So, you know, I know I like to talk about when I talk about leadership, about core values. Can you speak to rural health's core values?
Yeah, well, I probably most address the ones that I find important. And I don't think I'm too much of an outlier, but everyone needs to think through deeply what their values are. I think a really core value for rural health advocacy is equity doesn't always mean equal. And that's actually, a core value we share with our colleagues who advocate for urban health, particularly inner city. So for us, keeping local care local in rural communities may make a requirement of more investment from either our state or our federal governments than it might do in many other settings. I talked earlier about we just don't have the kinds of scale. So if we want to have a fairly well, this decentralized system of healthcare where that can be done appropriately, it may in some instances require a higher investment. So I have a strong value of where reasonably possible is people being able to get care locally. Another set of, I had a long conversation once with a good friend, old friend, who's one of the early pioneers in family medicine, Dr. John Fry. And he reminded me of a number of principles that he has and which I think are spot on and probably shared by many practitioners. And maybe it's the fact that they're often being challenged is maybe one of the reasons why physician nurse satisfaction levels are all-time lows. But he talks about the fundamental need for trust in the relationship between physician or nurse and patient. And that needs to be earned in both directions. He talked to me about a commitment on the physician's part to being responsible, to feeling that responsibility in a deep way, not just, showing up on time. And also perseverance in that the physician would be present at important times in the patient's life. So it really is about a relationship between a physician and a patient. I recently lost a longtime physician, my own personal physician, and it was a major transition to establish a new relationship. But other values related to medicine that I think are key is that we support our physicians in their role as advocates for the patients, but at the same time also giving the physician the freedom to say no. If a patient has come in having seen one too many commercials for a particular drug that he or she really doesn't need.
Right.
Also the ability to make exceptions as more and more of our physicians work in large systems. We don't want to lose the ability of that physician or nurse practitioner who's on the ground to make exceptions. You know, maybe need to justify in some reasonable way why that protocol needs to be deviated from, but they need to have the right to do that. In a payment system that's not based just on throughput, which is a major issue, I think, for a lot of practitioners, and particularly in primary care, who feel that, you know, they're basically under a lot of pressure, regardless of how their employers pay, but they themselves are under pressure to just maximize the throughput, and which can be at total odds with the other principles that John mentioned and that I just repeated.
Well, that's good. I love this idea of rural health's core values, because in turbulent times, you have to know what your core values is to help you navigate your way through things. So, you know, speaking of turbulent times, you know, there's a lot of polarization taking place right now, whether it's urban versus rural, conservatives versus liberals, racial issues, whatever. What do we need to do to bridge that polarization gap?
And I've thought deeply about this. I mean, I can remember an issue that I've struggled with as much in the last half year or so. I don't think the polarization is totally new, but it's certainly gone to higher levels. I should say, everybody knows how, I think, dysfunctional this polarization is in our state capitals and in Washington. And so what I want to reflect on briefly is not with the intention that somehow I can make a difference there. But I think where we all can make a difference in rural health is not allowing our own behaviors to begin to mimic what we see day in, day out on TV or here on the radio driving to work. So I've actually tried to think more and more about how I can moderate my own behaviors. In some sense, as I mentioned, this isn't new. I do a cartoon series for my newsletter, and years ago I put one in that basically was an image of rural is seen by urban and urban is seen by rural. And the picture of a rural as seen by urban is basically a hick, a farmer just kind of dumb. Yep. And urban is seen by rural is basically a classical hippie. And that sounds trite maybe, but the reality is to this day in conversations in rural parts of the state and urban parts of the state, and I actually happen to live in an urban part of the state and do a reverse commute, I hear those kind of generalizations thin look out more often than I'd like to admit. I have come to believe, though, doing this reverse commute from Madison, Wisconsin, out to Sauk City most days of the week, has been a real blessing because it's really forced me, even before the current conversations around all this polarization, is to reflect on, you know, I like and respect and work with people in both Madison and around rural parts of the state. I'm not going to choose sides when I work for rural, but I'm going to look for ways that we can work together. Having said, so I kind of have a head start on this issue, and I'm grateful for it. Having said that, someone who's got a lot of attention nationally is a professor at University of Wisconsin, Kathy Kramer. She wrote a book called The Politics of Resentment, which I would highly recommend people to try to get a copy of. But she went around the state for a number of years trying to get a sense of kind of the temperature of what people in smaller communities were feeling about issues in our state. And she got an earful. Basically, there is a divide in our state with Madison and Milwaukee on one side as our two biggest cities, and then outstate as a kind of a separate country. Madison is seen as equivalent to university and the legislature, which at the moment in certain areas are not held in the highest esteem. Madison, Milwaukee are seen as areas that suck in resources. But I think, and the power comes from Madison as opposed to around the state. But the biggest thing I think that she discovered is just simply the anger at this sense of disrespect, that people are not understood, they're not respected. And that clearly, I mean, she wrote this book before the presidential election and before rural Wisconsin voted for President Trump after two elections of having a majority vote for then President Obama. So we have a lot of work to do for those who are kind of see ourselves as bridge people to try to find common ground between people who choose to and are grateful to have the opportunity to live and work in smaller rural communities, and those who privileged to enjoy working in larger communities. In general, another resource I'd recommend to your listeners is David Blackenhorn wrote in the American Interest, a kind of cleverly labeled article, The Seven Habits of Highly Depolarizing People. And let me just cite just a few of them. He talks about looking for good in conflict. So I can give a good example. I've been in conflict with CMS, Medicare, my whole career. Okay. Recently, in good measure, due to, I think, the leadership of the two co-chairs of the CMS Rural Council, I think we're doing a better job of finding common ground. And we both really care about quality. We really care about access. So, when you're in a conflict, look for where there might be some shared values. A favorite one, it actually comes from a Republican source. My example is count higher than two, in that not everything is black or white or yes or no. And Newt Gingrich, which is the source for the quote, I'm going to give, you say yes if rather than no because, because that leads to conversations of finding alternatives as opposed to which of two potential solutions is the one that has to be chosen. Another favorite thing that David Blankenhorn talks about is maintain some doubt and some humility. And he talks about he'd rather have a beer with someone who's searching for truth than with someone who's found it. And he's quoting another person when he says that. But I think we all can relate to that. We don't particularly enjoy talking to somebody that's so certain 100% of everything.
That's a good
point. So, it's an article well worth your listeners reading.
So that's The Seven Habits of Highly Depolarizing People by David Blankenhorn, if I got that right?
Blankenhorn.
Thank you. Sounds like a great article. I love some of those, so I'll have to read up on the rest of those. So, Tim, you've seen a lot in your career in rural health, and there's a lot going on currently. So what scares you the most about the future of rural health?
I tend to sleep pretty well, pretty deeply. So on a good day, I don't really do being scared or being depressed, and there's plenty of reasons for both. I think the one thing that bothers me a fair amount, and it's because it bothers my members, and that are issues that I mentioned earlier around network adequacy and networks being too closed. I think most health plans that we work with here at the co-op and some of our shared services get us into that space on a daily basis. Most are good actors, but from time to time, sometimes they make decisions which they believe are in their competitive best interest that we find are extremely disruptive for our values of keeping local care local and in rural communities. I'm going to give you some examples of what we've seen. And again, this is not every health plan in every community, but we've seen enough of it to be concerned, and that we have an advocacy and a couple other initiatives underway to try to directly address it. But a health plan does not offer a contract with a local hospital. And in some instances, even where federal law would fairly be interpreted as saying, as a central community providers on the exchange, they should be offered that contract. Or the health plan offers a contract that only Medicaid rates and admits they really don't need or want a contract. Health plan has contracted with a hospital, but does not contract with or credential employed physicians. The hospital has a contract with a health plan, but no one is referred to the hospital. And sometimes maybe you aren't listed in the health plan's directory of providers, or their fine print in the back of the directory. Health plan contracts only with the clinic, but not the specialist or hospitals affiliated with the clinic. I think in rural communities around the country, we're going to see more of this, because I think in general, there's a lot of evidence that payers, health plans are going to increasingly narrow networks. And we just need to be really vigilant about making the case that rural must be part of those networks, and that the idea of health plans essentially recruiting rural patients out of rural communities to feed urban providers is simply unacceptable.
Excellent points. Thanks for sharing those with us. So that's what concerns you the most. What excites you the most about the future in rural health?
I would say the same thing that always excited me is that regardless of what I just said about narrow networks or anything else, we're always going to need rural health. It may look different, it may have different priorities, but it's definitely needed. And being able to be part of a movement that to meet that very basic need is exciting for me. And like I said before, it's simply not boring. My big career thing was to avoid being bored. And I'm not the most successful person I know.
Yeah. Well said. So, you know, we've covered a lot of ground here today, Tim. We've covered a lot of topics, and I love some of your comments and everything. So if our listening audience only takes one thing away from the conversation today, what should that be?
I've always been a little obstreperous. I'm going to give you three answers.
Okay.
One is to know your core values. Two, I would say work to find common ground with those around you, whether you agree or disagree. And three is basically unleash the power of true partnerships. I've had the privilege of working in collaborative business models my whole career, and I know it's not easy work. I know a lot of us come into it not having any training in terms of how partnerships can work and not work. So it needs to be taken seriously like any other major business.
Excellent. Know your core values, work to find common ground, and unleash the power of true partnerships. Well stated, Tim. I always enjoy listening to you, Tim, and especially today on Rural Health Leadership Radio. Thank you so much for making time to have this conversation with us today. Thank you, Tim Size, Executive Director of the Rural Wisconsin Health Cooperative.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please go to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever your favorite podcast app might be and subscribe to Rural Health Leadership Radio. To continue the conversation of leadership in rural health, you can also join our LinkedIn group called Rural Health Leadership Radio. And don't forget to apply for our group coaching or one-on-one coaching to kick your leadership effectiveness up a notch or two. So until next week, let's keep working to improve rural healthcare, one conversation at a time.
If you would like to connect with today's guest, please send an email with your contact information to bill@billoxier.com. If you would like to be a guest or suggest someone else as a guest, have a question you would like to ask, or simply want to contact Rural Health Leadership Radio, please use that same email address, bill@billoxier.com. That's bill@billoxier.com. You can also visit our website at www.rhlradio.com.
We'd ask that you please support our sponsor, the Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health. The Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health's mission is to improve rural health, one leader at a time.